mic on. No, I was sitting at Starbucks preparing, and I was thinking, oh, I had this image I was going to throw up on the screen. I wondered who was on visuals today, so I went and took a quick look, and turns out it's my son, who's in Romania. So, I came over here and we set up, and Zach is happy enough to, or kind enough to fill in. If by some chance the screen all of a sudden goes black behind me, it's because Zach got called off, and because he's on call right now. So that might happen. Every story has a cost. It's been a bit of a motto I've had recently, or for the last while. We hear these and we tell these fantastic stories about things that happen in our life, or good things, bad things, whatever. And it's kind of struck me sometimes that the perspective on that is that, you know, the better the story, it's like, wow, God did this great rescue or whatever kind of thing happened. And you think back about all of the details involved in that story, and it's the better the story, kind of the more crisis or the more climax, the more sort of anxiousness or whatever was involved. There was something in there that made that story, that drew you in. I'm going to tell a few stories this morning along that same vein. In 1972, Edward Daly, he was a priest in Ireland. He was in the city of Londonderry, in the county of Londonderry. He'd been there for a number of years. He'd been an active priest in that community. Part of what was happening in that time frame was, in that region, was Londonderry is part of Northern Ireland, and there was a lot of conflict at the time. At the time, his community was an oppressed community. His Catholic parishioners, his fellow believers, were an oppressed people. A lot of discrimination in the area. There was a lot of systemic discrimination in that. What was happening was laws were being passed, and sort of the elected officials were part of the whole process of disenfranchising and ghettoizing a Catholic population. So it took many forms. Part of it was housing. It became harder and harder for Catholics to find housing except in certain regions within the city. Within jobs, employment was often restricted to non-Catholics, specifically to Protestants. So you had a growing unemployment, you had a growing homelessness, you had a growing sort of population of people who were feeling oppressed by a system. And Father, this was his congregation. These were the people that he cared for. Now, Father Daly took it upon himself to be part of a large organization to fight these discriminations, and he did things like letter-writing campaigns, and he would meet with officials, and he was doing a lot of things to try and speak truth to power on behalf of his people. This Sunday after Mass, particular Sunday after Mass, he joined 10,000 or so other Catholics as they were doing a march against some of this discrimination. Specifically, what had happened was the police had rounded up just over 300 of his parishioners and were holding them without charge, just put them in jail. So they were upset about this, naturally. It's families, it's fathers, it's brothers. These have all been sort of rounded up and taken away. So he joined with 10,000 others, and they marched down the street. And as they're marching down William Street, there's a police barricade at the end. The police are ready for them, and so there's barbed wire and police with guns and riot gear and all that. So they decide they're not going to try and attack the barricade. They're not doing any of that. This is a protest march. It's not a war, a civil war or anything. So they just turn and whole mass of people start heading down towards Bogside. So they head down a side street. But as the mass of people head down this street, a number of young people kind of go towards the police lines, and they're angry. So they grab things like rocks and stuff, and they throw them at the police and call them nasty words and names. And so the police respond by firing tear gas, which is fairly common in this kind of dispute. They fire tear gas, the young people throw stones, and then eventually it kind of Well, the police escalated it a little bit. They started shooting some rubber bullets, and that kind of got a little intense or whatever. But that was fine. This had still happened before. The vast majority of the people, they understood this was how these protests went. But then all of a sudden, something different happened. All of a sudden, army vehicles came crashing through the barricades towards the protesters. And out of the army vehicles jumped a group of paratroopers, and they just jumped out and started randomly shooting people. Just shooting. There was a young man, 17-year-old Jackie Dudley. All of a sudden, he sees this craziness start to happen, and he starts to run away. And as he runs away, one of the paratroopers stops, gets down on his knee, and shoots him in the back as he's running away. Father Daly sees this. He and some other men rush forward and try to save Jackie. There's this, he's waving a white handkerchief. In fact, Zach, if you want to throw up the image, this was the image here of Father Daly there on the left, waving the handkerchief, and they're carrying Jackie Dudley there to try and save his life. So they get him to hospital, and his wounds are too great, and Jackie dies. Father Daly stayed with him till the end of his life. But this image and the story that Father Daly tells was part of what eventually brought some justice to this whole scenario. It took a lot of years, but eventually it did. Because every good story has a cost, and the cost of the story of Father Daly played a significant role in two of my favorite songs by the Irish band U2, which is what got me into this morning. The first song on their album War, which came out in 1982, was the song Sunday Bloody Sunday, which was about this event, and specifically inspired by Father Daly and this photo. I want to tell you the story that inspired the last song on this album. In 10,035 BC, David was on the run. He was a young man, his late teens, early 20s. A few years earlier, the prophet and leader Samuel had come to him and had anointed him to be king over Israel, over all of Israel. You can switch the image. Samuel had come and anointed him as king over all of Israel. The shepherd boy turned king. So from that point on, he knew that this was the direction where God was leading him, and he kind of moved into that direction. But since that time, since he had been anointed king, his life had not been easy. The current king, Saul, saw him obviously as a threat and was out to kill him. So for years now, David has been fleeing. He's been running. And in this running, he's been gathered around him a group of people that are now his followers. And so now he has this group of people, men and their families and others who have been disenfranchised within the community are now following him around. And so he sells himself as a mercenary to try and earn some money to buy food to care for those that are with him. So he travels around and he is constantly on the run. And then there's crazy times in his life as he's running away from Saul, and then he goes into another country, and then they want to kill him over there, or they want to recruit him, so he pretends to be insane so that he can get away from them, and then he's back into Israel, and then he hears that the woman that he loves has been married off onto somebody else, so now forced to marry somebody else, so he doesn't even have her. And he has these opportunities to take Saul's life and end all of this, but he chooses not to because he doesn't believe that's what God has called him to do. And he's going to continue to hear God's voice and to follow. But he's running, and he's in constant fear, and he doesn't know who to trust. And it is in this kind of period of his life when he is sometimes either fighting for his life or he's running for his life or all of that, that he writes these words. Let's throw it up there, Zach. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to hear me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction and out of the miry bog. He set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to my God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Blessed is a man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. You have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts towards us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell them, yet they are more than can be told. In sacrifice and offering you have not delighted, but you have given me an open ear. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you have not required. Then I said, behold, I have come in the scroll of the book it is written of me. I delight to do your will, O God. Your law is within my heart. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. Behold, I have not restrained my lips as you know, O Lord. I have not hidden your deliverance within my heart. I have spoken of your faithfulness, of your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. As you, O Lord, you will not restrain your mercy from me. Your steadfast love and your faithfulness will ever preserve me. For evils have encompassed me beyond number. My iniquities that overtake me, I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head. My heart fails me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. O Lord, make haste to help me. Let those who be put to shame and disappointed altogether, who seek to snatch away my life, let those be turned back and brought to dishonor, who delight in my hurt. Let those be appalled because of their shame and who say to me, ah, ha, ha. But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation say continually, great is the Lord. As for me, I am poor and needy. But the Lord takes thought of me. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. Psalm 40. Sean brought us into the Psalms last week. One of the strengths of the Psalms is that the Psalms are rooted in human experience. The more we live, the more we experience life, the more Psalms make sense. The richer and deeper the words have for us, the meaning expands and expands and expands. So at one level, anybody, you can be a youth, you can read the Psalms intellectually, you can understand the beauty of the words and how they're put together, and there is some comfort and there is some joy in that. But as you grow older, or as you experience more in life, the Psalms become richer and richer, because the stories that we have in our lives become more and more reflected in the Psalms. The hopeful words we read here are not just vapor. They've been earned. When David writes these words, they mean something because he has real experiences behind them to back them up. Everything has a cost, and the cost of hope is despair, suffering, and discontent. If you want to understand what it is to get out of a pit, you have to be in a pit first. If you want to know what light is, we know what light is because we know of its absence. We know what it means to be healed because we know what it is to be sick. We know what it is to be injured. We know what it is to be forgiven because we know what it is to sin. We understand that the psalmist, when he describes being in a pit because he can't get out of, because we've been in pits that we've been unable to get out of except for God's mighty hands. That's how we know. So what is David's response to his deliverance, to being pulled out of the miry clay? In verse 3 to 5, he says, I will sing a new song. David tells everyone how great God is, what he has done in his life. David's testimony, I would suggest our testimony, becomes an inspiration for others. In fact, David holds this up before God as a mark of why he deserves God's mercy. Well, deserves might be strong. But he holds it up as a mark to say, I haven't been quiet. You have healed me. You have brought me out of this miry pit. You have saved my life. I will tell everyone. I have not held it in. These are not quiet prayers said internally, thank you, Lord, for saving me. This is David yelling and telling everyone, look what God has done. Oh, that was big. Was I really yelling? It's, look what God has done. Look at what he has done for me. Look at what he has done for us. And so he says he announces it within the assembly. He tells and he retells the story of God's greatness. It inspires others. It keeps proper perspective for David and for others. Perspective then becomes back onto God, onto who he is as deliverer. It builds trust. It builds faith. There is there's this experiment. I like research and kind of science. So it's an interesting experiment. If you had two groups of people, and one group would have their hand in a bucket of warm water, and another group would have their hand in a bucket of ice water, and then you ask the groups, how much cold do they think their body could withstand before it would be painful? The group who has their hand in the warm water will always choose a colder temperature. Always. Their hands in warm water, and they always overestimate how much cold they can handle. The people who have their hands in the cold water, who are currently experiencing cold, always underestimate how much pain they can withstand, because they are currently experiencing cold. So the people who are experiencing warm think that they can handle a lot more than the people who are experiencing cold currently. But if the people who are experiencing cold water, if they take their hand out and then go do something else for about 10 minutes, they fill out a survey or they do something else, and then you ask them what temperature, how much cold their body could handle before it's painful, their response will be the same as the people who have their hands in warm water. 10 minutes. 10 minutes away from the pain of ice water, and they have forgotten what it feels like. 10 minutes. That's why David tells the stories. And that's why he shares to the great assembly about his deliverance. Why does he speak? Why does he write these psalms? Why is it so important to tell and to retell these stories of what God has done? Because they remind us. Because our memories are short. They're so short. And so to tell and to retell these stories of God's place and God's deliverance for us builds trust, it builds faith, and it builds resilience because, as we'll read later on, we fall into pits again. But then we move into verse 6. David is not saying the sacrifices don't mean anything, but he's tapping into a relationship with God behind the sacrifices. And this is what the prophet Amos echoes, the same thing. This is from Amos chapter 5. It says this: therefore, you trample on the poor. This is a prophet speaking to the people of Israel. And he says this: therefore, you trample on the poor. You exact taxes of grain from them. You've built houses of hewn stone, and you shall not dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you will not drink the wine. For I know how many are your transgressions and how great are your sins. And you have afflicted on the righteous. You take a bribe. You turn away aside the needy at the gate. Therefore, he who is prudent will keep silent in such a time, for it is an evil time. Seek good and not evil, that you may live, so that the Lord of hosts may be with you, as you have said. Hate evil and love good, and establish justice at the gate. I hate and I despise your feasts. I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. The peace offerings of your fat and animals, I will not look upon them. Take away from me the noise of your songs, the melody of your harps, I will not listen. But let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. The same spirit that spoke through Amos also spoke through David, and before him through Samuel, the one who anointed David as king. For Samuel writes this, The Lord has as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. In verse 8 of Psalm 40, the passage literally translated says, "Ears you have dug for me." The Lord has opened David's ears, and he has heard God's voice, and he will do his will. Because what does he say? David say, "I delight to do your will, O Lord." In response to this, David says, "You've opened my ears. I don't need to do sacrifices," which is, understand, at the time, everybody's doing sacrifices. David does sacrifices. This is kind of this temporary thing before Jesus comes, before his death on the cross. Sacrifices is what they had. And David said, "We're not doing your sacrifices. That's not the basis here. You've opened my ears. I can hear your voice. And because I can hear your voice, I go and I do your will. And that's what you want. I delight to do your will, O Lord." The response to hearing God's voice is to do his will. Now in verse 12, David shifts into a lament for his current troubles. The Lord's past deliverance inspires David's trust, but that doesn't stop him from praying and asking for deliverance again. He's again being hounded. He's again having people hedge him in because he's again on the run, and he is again having people try to do him harm. So rather than give in to fear and despair or lash out in violence, David asks the Lord, the good and perfect judge, to do that work. His response is humble, and he draws on the memories of God's past goodness to give him strength to rely on him again. He retells his stories of God's deliverance to do it again. So rather than lash out in fear or turtle in despair, David prays and does the will of God. He doesn't allow the actions of others to dictate his. He'll continue to do the will of God. His perspective is on God, not those who hunt him, not the suffering they cause him. He doesn't fear them, even when they seek his life. So my question then becomes, what about us? Because the scriptures, this is one of those wonderful things. If you see the Spirit's work, the same words, Samuel writes about obedience. David echoes them, and then again, Amos echoes them a few hundred years later. 600 years. It's 600 years between David and Amos, and you're still getting these same echoes. It's the same Spirit moving through. And it moves through history and into us and our time now. So what about us? What do we do when troubles come? What happens if God doesn't pull us out of the pit or pull us up fast enough? In Psalm 131, David answers this question for himself as well. He says, this is what he says about it. He says, "There are things that happen that are too great for me. Too great for me to understand. And in those times, I will be like a weaned child." Why a weaned child? Because a child who, before they are weaned, there is a franticness about it. There is a franticness about an unweaned child for food. They want food, they want answers, they want their desires satiated now. Now, right now. For those of you who are nursing mothers, you kind of have a very immediate sense of what it is to have your child want to eat right now. But a weaned child is at peace. A weaned child does not have that franticness about it. And David says that about himself when it comes to things like these trials and struggles. And when evil and suffering in the world, he says, "I'm going to be like a weaned child. I'm not going to be frantic. I'm not going to be crazy about this. I'm going to be at peace in my relationship." And that might seem a little simple, maybe a little trite, but that's why we share our stories. A couple of months ago, one of my uncles was sitting on our couch, and he was telling me stories about when he was young. He was a child, and him and his family were fleeing from war. They were fleeing across some frozen fields. basically there's no roads or whatever. They'd been told they had to get out, and they just ran. His father's already been taken off, and he's in a concentration camp in the middle of Russia. And his mother is running with him and his aunt and his siblings, and they're fleeing. It's cold. And during the fleeing, his sister dies. It's so cold she freezes to death while they're carrying her. They get to this village, and there's a convent in this village, and the nuns take them in, and they care for them, they give them food, they give them shelter, and they take his sister, the body of his sister, and they bury her. They give her rites, and they give her a place, and they give her a headstone. They give her a name, so she's not in a nameless, empty grave somewhere. They actually buried his sister with the nuns, which was absolutely against order. It's one of those things you just do and you don't tell the authorities because it's the right thing to do. I guess Catholics don't like when you do that, but they didn't like it. But they did it because they promised to care for this infant, this child's body. As my uncle's sitting there telling me this story, he is pointing out to me all the way along these steps of where God was involved and who lived and how God provided for them. It's a perspective of God's deliverance, whereas he could think it's awful and he could dwell on the death of his sister, but rather what he sees in this whole story is God's deliverance and grace, even in tragedy and suffering. So I hear in David's voice, in David's psalm, a deliverance that says that life isn't simple, that bad things are going to happen, and yet, he pulls me up from the miry clay. And yet, he shares these stories. In September 1982, the band U2 entered the studio to record The War. They're young men. They're in their early 20s. They've had a couple of successful albums, moderately, and some of them really working through some heavy faith issues. They come into they record this album. They start the album off with Sunday Bloody Sunday, which is their call, as I mentioned earlier, from the Bogside Massacre in 1972. And their response is to do Psalm 40. They close the album with Psalm 40. And I'm going to read for you just some of the lyrics, both from Sunday Bloody Sunday and then their response. So Sunday Bloody Sunday, some of the lyrics are this, for those of you who don't know the song. I can't believe the news today. Oh, I can't close my eyes and I can't make it go away. There's broken bottles under children's feet, bodies strewn across a dead-end street. But I won't heed the battle cry. I'm not going to be drawn into violence. And the battle's just begun and there's many lost, but tell me who has won. The trench is dug within our hearts, and mothers, children, brothers, sisters torn apart. Wipe the tears from your eyes. Wipe the tears away. Oh, wipe your tears away. I'll wipe your tears away. It's true, we are immune when fact is fiction and TV reality. And today, millions cry. We eat and drink while tomorrow they die. Because the real battle has just begun to claim the victory Jesus won. It's how the album starts. And the album closes is with this. Because I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined and heard my cry. He lifted me up out of the pit, out of the mire and clay. And I will sing. I will sing a new song. He set my feet upon a rock and made my footsteps. For many will see. Many will see and hear. And I will sing. I will sing a new song. I will sing. I will sing a new song. How long to sing this song? One of the primary roles of faith is to make us conscious. We are not the blind leading the blind. Our stories of faith, of God stepping into our fear and sorrow, lifting us up out of pit, out of the miry clay, These stories inform us, they build our trust, they orient us correctly, and they give us the strength to do what is right regardless of what others around us choose to say or do. There are so many reasons for us to be afraid. There's so many reasons for us to fall into despair. There's so many reasons for us. And Psalm 40 speaks to us and says, share the stories. Share the stories of God's goodness. Share the stories of God's deliverance. And give it strength and allow those stories to give us strength when it's not there. When we're hewn in and we have, and it feels like it's blackness around us. Allow those stories to inspire us. Hold them to know of God's deliverance.